And we're holding on page Yud Tes in Brachos Ois Chof Zayin. Still talking about various things having to do with davening, which has been the subject of a lot of the Agadah over the last couple of blocks. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Yosi Ben Zimra, Minayin Sha'Kodesh Baruch Hu Mispalo. How do we know that Hashem davens? Now, what on earth would that mean? Hashem davens. Who does he have to daven to? We'll get to that point in a minute. But first, how do we know? Shenema, because the pasuk says, "V'habi osim al ha'kodshi." Hashem says, "We had it a few days ago, and I've heard of some gedalia. I will bring them, the Jewish people, to my holy mountain. V'simachtim beveis tefilasi. I'll make them happy in the house of my tefillah." So tefilas sum lo nema. Now the expected thing would have said beveis tefilas sum in the house of their tefillah, the house, the beis hamikdash, where they daven. Instead, it says elo beveis tefilasi melamed or mikan shakodesh baruch hu matzli or mispalo. From here we see that Hashem davens. My matzli. So what is Hashem daven? What is the content of his tefillah? Amar Rava or Rav Zutter Batruvia Amar Rav, Hashem says, Yehi Rotsin Milafonai, may it be the will from before me, Sheyich Beshu Rachamai Askasi, that my Rachmanus, that my mercy should overcome my anger, V'yagolu Rachamai Amidoisai, and that my Rachmim should, literally, Yagolu means roll over, but in other words, they should overpower my Midos, in other words, Hashem is saying, in effect, my Midos Adin would say that I should be treating the Jewish people in a certain strict way, but instead that my Rachmim should overcome that, V'esnaigim Bonai Midos HaRachmim, that I should act towards my children with the midah of rachmim, the ekonis lahem, the fnim b'shuras adin, and that I should go the fnim b'shuras adin with them. So that is Hashem's tefillah. Now, what do you mean? Who is Hashem asking with this tefillah? There's no one higher than Hashem for him to ask. So the Rashba starts by explaining over here. First, he brings from Abhai Goin, and there's something very similar that Rav Sadia Goin also says, that the Gemara doesn't mean that Hashem is davening. What the Gemara means is the same way as, for example, that we say that for example, Hashem, so to speak, wrapped himself in a talus and showed Moshe how to daven the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachmim, the same way Hashem demonstrates to us what the proper way is to daven. And the content of our tefillah should be that kind of thing, which in fact, of course, we say that. We say that at the end of the bracha of Malchus. We say it every day at the end. We say it every day after the parasha of the Akedah. So the Rashba says that's all very good to start with, but the Loshon of the Gemara is not mashma that. The Gemara is not saying that Hashem is demonstrating to us that this is what we should say. The Gemara is saying that Hashem himself literally is davening. So what could that possibly mean? So the Rashba explains, and you can see our Kosev over here has an extremely long explanation as well. The gist of their explanations, what's Negeya Torah Gemara, is we know that teva tov lahetiv. Hashem wants to be able to. Hashem b'chlal is the ultimate good, and He wants His nature kaviyachol is to do good. And Hashem wants the thing that Hashem wants most of all is to be mashpia good to us. But we have to be a keli for it. So the content of this tefillah is that Hashem is asking that Hashem is saying al derech. The Rashba compares it to the way we find after Matan Torah, where Hashem says mi yitin v'hoyu levavam zelahem liyira oisi. If only it were possible that their hearts would fear me always as they did by Matan Torah. Again, what do you mean? If only it were possible. Hashem is kol yachol, but Hashem is saying I gave bechira chofshis to human beings, and therefore I, so to speak, it's out of my hands. I need to ask that you should do that. So here also Hashem is expressing the idea that we should be, that Hashem is pleading with us and then davening that we should be a keli that's roi for his bracha so that he can give us all the good that he wants to. And so therefore part of it is that after all, Hashem has a midah of din, but Hashem also has a midah of rachamim. But when you get down to it, rachamim, the famous difference we know throughout Chassidus, the difference between chesed and rachamim is chesed you give whether the other person deserves it or not. Rachamim is based on you evaluate whether the person is deserving. So gvura is b'chlal, you know, you see if the person is deserving, and if not, then you cut him off. But rachamim is that you see in what way is it roi to give him to give him the good that you want to give him. And then so the same way the Ebishter is saying you go to rachamai amidosai and all that. In other words, that he's asking that we should be. That we should be making ourselves into a suitable keli for him to be able to express rachamim rather than having to express just din to us. Hakosev over here in his explanation, by the way, he goes into, so the Rashba starts talking about the next point we're going to have, the next piece we're going to have in the Gemara, Yishmol B'ni Barcheni. Actually, so you know what, we'll deal with that when we get to that next piece, what the meaning of Baruch is as it relates to Hashem. Anyway, there's also, of course, everybody else also has their own, all the other Rishonim and Achronim have their own takes on what exactly it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mispalel. The Maharal talks about a long idea in it in his Sefer Be'er HaGoyla. He explains, among other things, the word Mispalel comes from a word that means to think. The Shurdish, Pei Lamed Lamed, among other things, means to think. So it refers to that Hashem is thinking, and like the Rashba and Akosev are saying, that Hashem really, really wants this to happen, and therefore we don't even use the word Rotzen or Chefetz, we use the word Mispalel, which represents like something even higher than that, that Hashem wants to bring down this Rotzen Elyon in a way that he can show Rachman, that he can show and act with Rachman towards us. And therefore uses the expression HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mispalel rather than HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rotza or HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chofetz or something like that to show that we're talking about a pnimius of Rotzen. In Chassidus, in a few places, it talks about it. One point that's made in these places is we have we're learning now, we're learning these days, and Tanya talks about the idea. You have the various levels of Elikus. You have Atzmus, and then you have it is very hard to understand. It is definitely one of it's definitely one of the parts of Tanya that yeah.
Not for me,
it's very
esoteric.
It's very hard. It's very, very hard to grasp. Keep in mind that this letter, this Igeres Chof that we're learning now in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe wrote it right before he passed away. So like, it's almost like he already had one foot in Gan Eden already. So yeah. Anyway. It is very hard to understand. Ultimately, by the way, the bottom line that comes out of it is a very essential point, Chassidus, namely at the end, after the Alter Rebbe goes through all these Olam Esalyonim and everything. The point is that the Olam Shalamata, the Gashmiistic world that we have in front of us over here, is the biggest expression of a course that exists, even more than the Olam Esruchniyim and the Malachim and so forth. And therefore, in the last lines over there, he says that explains the importance of mitzvahs involving Dvarim Gashmiyim. Because with those, you're taking something that bespeaks Elikus in a pnimiistic way, even more than all the ruchniistic things in the world. The fact that you have things in the world that look like aniva afsiod. We look at the things around us that are in the world. We don't realize that we don't see the Elikus in them. They themselves don't perceive the Elikus in themselves. So the only one who has the ability to make something like that could perceive itself as independent is the Eibishter, who himself is independent, who's Kol Yochel. So therefore, the truest expression of the Eibishter's Koyach is in the Gashmiistic world, and therefore when we use those things for mitzvahs, then it means so much more. So ultimately, there comes out a very practical thing from this Igeres. But yeah, the details of how we reach there in the Igeres, I agree, are very, very hard to understand. Yeah. Anyway. The point is, though, in various places in Chassidus, we talk about there's the Atzmos of Hashem, and then there's the various ways that the Eibishter relates to us, the various chitzoniistic aspects of Elikus, the Sphiris, the Kav, the this and that. So therefore, what we're talking about over here, when we're talking about over here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mispalel, so in many places in Chassidus it talks about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that term refers to Zohar and Malchus. So it refers to the Sphiris through which the Eibishter relates to us. And we know, from the Geras Chof, we know that on a certain level, the Sphiris also have a Koyach Eliki, through them you have Nivroim and Kates and so forth. But still, the point is, that's not the highest level of the course. So to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Zohar and Malchus have to appeal to a higher level of Atzmos to ask that Yehi Rotzen, that a new Rotzen should be drawn down from there to treat us Jewish people with Midas HaRachmim and then Midas Chesed, Midas HaRachmim, and so forth. So in that sense, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzli means, in other words, that these high levels of Elikus have to still come to even higher levels, lifnat simtzum, in order to draw down the hashpa that's needed for the Jewish people.
Tanya Chitzis these days, last few days, it's just like going to the Rebbe's for bringing to the old lady. He said, just go and listen, because your neshama understands.
Right.
You don't understand.
That's true.
You get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, Pam achas nichnasti lahaktuk Torahs lefnai v'lefnim. One time I went in to bring Torahs lefnai v'lefnim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And by the way, so now Marsha explains over here that Marsha has relatively little to explain on this piece, Mistama, because everything that he would have wanted to say is already said by the Rashba and by HaKosev. But he explains that in particular, we have the Beis Mikdash Shel Mata, the one on earth that Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol went into, is exactly parallel to the Beis Mikdash Shel Maila. So therefore, so that's the particular place where the Pasuk is saying that that's the appropriate place where Hashem says this tefillah, or actually where he asks Rabbi Shmuel to say this tefillah on his behalf more than any place else in the world. By the way, also the Lashon that we have, it seems very repetitive. Why all the different Lashonis? So Ben Yehoyada actually explains, we have the Gemara at the end of Yoma, the Alter Rebbe brings it at the beginning of the Eretz HaTshuva, that there are Arba Chalukei Kapara, there are four different types of Averus that a person might do where there's different degrees of Kapara. Mitzvahs Eseh, a person just has to do Tshuva. Mitzvahs Lois Eseh, he also needs Yom Kippur, Kimi Mechaper. Then you have, there's ones where he also needs Yisurim, and then there's one where he also needs Misa. So therefore, corresponding to those four is why we have the four expressions over here. That the Eibishter should be mechaper for each one of them. So Tanya, Omer Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, Pam machas nichnasti lahaktuk Torahs lefnai v'lefnim. One time I went in on Yom Kippur to offer Torahs lefnai v'lefnim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'ra'isi akasrikel. Now, what is this name over here? There's two different ways of explaining that the Mefarshim have to explain it. One is that it's a name of Hashem, and one is that it's a name of a malach. So, in fact, the Ur Zeruah, an important Rishon, points out on the face of it, it can't be a malach, because when the Pasuk says on Yom Kippur, b'chol adam lo yiyah ba'oil moed, and then the Medrash or the Yerushalmi or something says that b'chol adam means even malachim are not allowed to be in the heichal at that time. It's the expression that the Zohar has in it, which is brought in many places in Chassidus, is Yisrael the malka b'chodoy. It's only the Jewish people represented by the Kohen Gadol and the king, Hashem, are there, nobody else, not even malachim, is allowed admittance. But in any case, there are Mephoshim who understand that it's a name for a very high level Malach, and then there are others who understand that it's actually one of the names of Hashem. Marsha explains that based on Kabbalah, that the middle of it is the word Keser, so that refers to Keser Elyon, and the Aleph before it refers to Ein Sof. So he says, I saw Akasriel, Kah Hashem Tzvakos, Yoshev Akise Romani, so that he's sitting on a high and exalted throne. And of course, it doesn't mean, you know, Ein Lo Dmus Haguf, etc. But he saw something that's a vision of Elikus, or according to the opinion that it's a Malach, it means he saw the Malach that is, so to speak, representing Hashem. You have elsewhere, for example, the Gemara talks about the Malach Matat, who is, you had Acher confused him with Hashem, etc. Anyway, the Omerli, and he said to me, Yishmael b'ni barcheni, Yishmael, my son, bless me. Amarti lefana of lawyer, so I said to him, Ribbono shel Olam, the same tefillah as we said before, but now expressed towards Hashem. Yehi rotzon lefanecha sheyich b'shu rachamecha es kaska, that your rachamim should overcome your anger, v'yagoylu rachamecha al midasecha, and your rachamim should roll over your midas, v'sisnaig manecha al midas rachamim, you should behave towards your children with the midah of rachamim, v'sikonis lam lefnim m'shir asadin, and you should go with them lefnim m'shir asadin, v'nen ali b'roshay. And Hashem, or the Malach who's standing over here and representing Hashem, so to speak, nodded his head to me, which means Rashi says that he's agreeing with my bracha and answering So the Gemara says, "My Kamash Malon, what does Rabbi Shmuel want to inform us with that point?" Which Eitz Yosef points out, it can't just be that he wants to just tell us a story, because it would be a thing of gaiva. Look at me, I had such a gilui of the course in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He must be telling it to us for a purpose. He wants to inform us, Birkas Hediot Alti Kala Be'enecha, that even the bracha of a simple person shouldn't be light in your eyes. In other words, obviously, any Nivra's bracha is nothing compared to Hashem, and yet Hashem asked for that bracha and appreciated it. So now the Rashba and HaKosev get into a long discussion over here. What exactly does it mean when we speak of a bracha in connection with Hashem anyway? So the Rashba starts about the Rashba talks about the idea that in general, when we say a bracha, it means that so first he says it's not just a matter of thanking Hashem. Literally, the word bracha means to increase. So it means that we're asking that all the course in the world should be increased. Hakosef goes into an even longer arichlus about it and explains, but after all, how can you speak of an increase as far as Hashem? And so he ends up explaining that what it means is that it means first of all, so on the one hand, it means that we're acknowledging that Hashem is the source of all bracha, but we're also, when we talk about it in terms of increase, what we're saying is, again, we want, knowing that Hashem's real rotzen is to be able to give good, then we're asking that it should be possible for Hashem to be able to give more and more good through the fact, again, that we're going to be appropriate makabel for it.
Also, the word bracha also has something to do with drawing down.
Yes. So now, first, Hakosef does mention over here in one line. He mentions that the word bracha can be related to the word brecha, which means a pool of water from which everything gets watered. So he says actually that we can't really say that in connection with Hashem, maybe because the implication would be like it waters them automatically, and nothing from Hashem is automatic. The Maharal also in Be'er HaGadol makes that point. The fact that we have to say that Hashem is davening this point means it's not an automatic thing that good comes from Hashem. Hashem has to want to be mashpiyeh, which Hashem wants to do. But we can never say, of course, that anything is automatic from Hashem, because automatic would imply chas v'shalom there has no control over it. So maybe that's what Hakosef means when he slugs up that one. But yes, in Chassidus, in many places, it does bring that point, that the word bracha is related to the word brecha, and it means, in other words, like you have, so to speak, a reservoir of goodness, a reservoir of elikos and all the good that comes from it, lamaila, and we open up channels from it to bring down lamata with our brachas. It also, in many places, it relates it to the word bricha, which means hamavrich has a geffen, for example, when you have you take a grapevine or some other tree like that, and you bend down a twig of it and put and bury one end of it into the dirt with the idea that eventually that end will grow roots and break off and form another tree. That's literally what cloning is, by the way. When you talk about cloning, that's literally you do that with plants. That's literally you're cloning the plant. And then that kind of process is called bricha in Lashon Kodesh. So therefore, Baruch is also related to that. That we're asking that Hashem, so to speak, take some of his Urva Chayus Aliki and bend it down towards us, and make it possible for us to receive from it.
We spoke a few minutes ago about a bracha from a simple yid.
Yeah.
The Rebbe said every yid can and should bless every other yid, because you never know.
Well, that's what we're saying over here. And in fact, so now in the actual Gemara in Brachos, it just stops over there. But now the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov stuck in here a piece that's actually originally from the Gemara Megillah, which bears on this point. There the Gemara mentions this point about Birkas Hediot, and there the Gemara digresses to give an example of that, where we see that a Hediot for this purpose doesn't even mean a Yid. We even have the two examples the Gemara is going to give are from a Goy. And still we see that their bracha accomplishes something. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, lo'olam al tehi birkas hediyot kala b'einecha. You should never consider the bracha of a hediyot, of even a simple person, to be something light in your eyes. You should always realize that even such a person, his bracha has a certain effect. Because we see there were two great people in their respective generations who were given a bracha by two simple people. Mind you, I mean, the people we're talking about are not simple. They were actually kings, but relative to the tzaddikim we're talking about, they were nobles. And their brachas were makoyim. Elohim David v'Daniel. That is David HaMelech and Daniel. David the Berche Aravna. Now with David, we find that Aravna gave him a bracha. How you go see? You have at the end of Sefer Shmuel, when it describes over there, there's a plague going on, and then Hashem sends a Nabi to tell David to go build a Mizbeach in Gurin or in Gurin Aravna Hayavusi. So the pasuk is, Vayomer Aravna El Melech Hashem Elokecha Yotzecha. Aravna, the Goy, says to the king, may Hashem, your God, desire your curb. And sure enough, the pasuk says, the Magefa stopped. So therefore, so we see that his bracha had a certain effect. Now, you know, the Rif asks over here, So what's going on? I mean, Hashem had sent a Novi to tell David to bring a korban over there, and then Hashem would accept it. What is Aravna's bracha even supposed to be adding? And he explains that like this. Years earlier, David had wanted to build the Beis Hamikdash. We know he was told by Nosson HaNavi, you're not going to build it. Shlomo HaMelech is going to build it. So now Hashem tells him, go build this Mizbeach over here. He didn't know yet that this is actually going to be the place, HaMokam HaShem Yivchar Hashem. As far as he knew, right now, for whatever reason, Hashem is telling me to bring a korban over here. Now, the result of Aravna's bracha, says the Rif, is that actually this was, in fact, the Mokam HaShem Yivchar Hashem. This was the place that the Eved permanently chose. Which in that case is an interesting way to say that the reason why it was the place Hashem chose is because of the bracha of a goy. Odd thing, but that is what he's saying. It is an interesting point, actually. There are a number of midrashim here and there that mention a point that there was gogolta shel Aravna hayivusi. There was the skull of Aravna that at various times it mentions was metame the place, and that David at first was concerned about it, and it came up again in the times of Chizkiyahu, and it came up again at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, and different mephoshim talk about what that means on a gashmistical level. How is there a skull of Aravna hayivusi anywhere near the Beis Hamikdash? But maybe one meaning of it has to also do with what the Rif is saying over here. If we're saying that a factor in the fact that this place was chosen as the place of the Beis Hamikdash is the bracha of Aravna goy, that it means he has a certain hashpah on the place, and therefore tremendous efforts have to be made to make sure that hashpah is not going beyond what it should, and then causing tuma, and then causing tuma in the Beis Hamikdash. Eitz Yosef points out another thing as well from Smichas Chachamim. He says, what was going on over there? We know there was a plague going on, and David had actually asked Hashem, he said, you know what, Hashem, the whole thing is my fault. It's because I took a census of the Jewish people when I wasn't supposed to. So he says, Tihina yodcha biu veis avi. So fine, let your hand, Hashem, be against me and my family rather than affecting the whole Jewish people. So now, if it hadn't been for Aravna's bracha, then the Magefa, fine. So even without his bracha, fine, the Magefa would have stopped from the people, because Hashem told them, bring a korban, and the Magefa will stop. But it still would have continued to affect David and his family. Because of Aravna's bracha, then he was fashpur with that as well. So that's Aravna. Daniel, the bracha d'Yovish Malka. And in the case of Daniel, he was given a bracha by Daryovish. So you have the story over there where Daryovish's ministers are jealous of Daniel. They get Daryovish to pass a law that for the next 30 days, nobody's allowed to make any request of any being except for the king. Daniel ignored it and continued davening as usual. And they caught him and had him, they caught him and convinced Daryovish to throw him into the lion's den. And the pasuk describes over there that Daryovish was not happy about the whole thing, but he was kind of forced into it by his ministers, because das modei aparas, as we know from Megillas Esther, then you can't overrule it. So he says, "Dichtiv elakoch diant polach leh bisdira." He says, "Your God, to whom you constantly serve, who yishes vinach, may He save you." And sure enough, Daniel was saved. So therefore, so we see, in other words, that Daryovish's bracha was a factor in it. Now, again, you have to ask, I mean, and what? And if Daryovish hadn't given him a bracha, then Daniel would have been killed by the lions. He had his own chosid for that. So again, the Rif explains, after all, there could have been a kitrug milamaila against Daniel. Years earlier, when he had interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's famous dream over there, then it says afterwards that Nebuchadnezzar started treating Daniel as a god. He said, the pasuk described, he started bringing karbonus and nesachim and whatever to him. So now there could be a kitrug milamaila. You know what? Daniel allowed that to happen, and therefore he deserves to be destroyed like an Avodah Zarah. So now, maybe he wouldn't be harmed by the lions, but at least, for example, he might be harmed by the ministers themselves. So therefore, Daryovish's bracha helped with all of that, helped to remove that kitrug and to make it that he was safe not only from the lions, but also from the ministers. Mara continues. How do we know that you should not try to appease a person when he's angry? And we have in Pirkei Avos, which there are practical reasons for that. First of all, because he's not going to listen to anything you have to say. Adrabe, he may even take whatever it is that you're saying and it'll get him even angrier. So how do we know? As we see that Hashem shows Moshe, He says, "Pona yelechu v'hani choisiloch." After the chet ego, Hashem says, "My face will go, and I will give, and I will put you at ease, and I will give you rest." Now, on the pasuk, Rashi explains, and Marsha brings it over here, that what it means is Hashem is saying that. So, like this, you had the whole dialogue between Hashem and Moshe that Hashem was saying after the chet ego, "I can't, my own shechina can't go with you anymore. I'm going to send a malach." And Moshe says, "Absolutely not. I don't want that." Etc. So, no, I want to. We want to have the shechina. And so Hashem says, "Fine." Hashem says, "My presence, my shechina, will go with you, and I'll help you rest that." So that's how Rashi explains on the pasuk. But Moshe says the Gemara over here doesn't like that explanation, because in the next pasuk Moshe says, he says, "In ein ponecha hochem al talei mizeh." Now Rashi on the pasuk explains that Moshe is saying, "Good, that's what I want, because if ponecha are not going to be hochem, then we'd rather not leave over here." But it's still, it's a strange way of expressing it. Once Hashem says pone yelechu, why does Moshe have to say good? Because if you hadn't, then I would have done such and such. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to understand over here that the word ponai means, as it's going to say, ponim shel zam, the angry face. We find sometimes in Tanakh where the word ponim is used to mean an angry or an upset face. We have, for example, by Chana in that Torah of Rosh Hashanah, where it says, "Foneha lo hoyu lo oid," she didn't have a face anymore. It means she didn't have her upset face that she did until now, because now, after having davened and received a bracha from Eli that she's going to have a child, now she's happy. So we see the word ponim can mean angry or upset. So Hashem is saying, "Pona yelechu." Once my anger goes away, v'hani choisilach, then I'll make things easy for you. In other words, then you can daven and I'll accept your appeasement. So therefore, so Hashem is saying, so to speak, don't bother davening to me while I'm angry. Wait until I calm down. And the point is, of course, you know, by the Eibishter, there's no such thing as anger as we perceive it. We have the idea all over the place that we have the emotions that there are lamaila are they're the shirdish of the emotions that we have down here lamata, but it's not something that we would recognize as caste. But the Eibishter is doing that, and again, in order to show us proper behavior. Once the Eibishter tells that to Moshe, then we understand for ourselves the concept of al tzirat es shem es chaverecha b'shas kaso. So Hashem,
It also says when a person is extremely caste and angry,
his
neshama is not
all
with him. It's like a
herd of Zohar. Right, man, is that also, yeah. So, Hamten means wait for me until my face of anger goes away. And then I'll make things easy for you. In other words, then I'm willing to accept your appeasement of me, your tefillahs and your request for mechila for the Jewish people. So the Gemara asks, is there such a thing as anger before Hashem? And the answer is ain. And as a matter of fact, yes, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says, "V'keil zoyim b'chol yoyim," Hashem is angry every day. "V'kama zamoy rega," and how long does Hashem's anger last? For a rega. Now, a couple of the Mephoshim here asked the question, what do you mean? What do you mean the Gemara is asking, is there such a thing as anger before Hashem? We have Pesukim all over Tanakh where it says, Vayichar Apoy, in this week's Parashah, Ki Eish Kodcha Ba'api, all kinds of examples like that throughout Tanakh where it describes Hashem as angry. So the basic answer is, yes, of course we find such expressions, but all of those are in reaction to what people are doing. The idea is, the Gemara is asking, where do we see that there should be an anger from Hashem that's not tolerated in what people do, just like almost like an intrinsic thing, that every day there's a moment when Hashem is angry? And the answer is yes, that pasuk, Keil Zayim, B'chol Yom, expresses that idea. So how long does it last? Rega. V'kama rega. How long is a rega? Echad v'chameishes riboy u'shmoina salofim u'shmoina meyers u'shmoinim u'shmoina b'shar. 58,888 of an hour. So you think about it, there are 60 minutes in an hour and 60 seconds in a minute. If you divide it down, if you use the figures that the Gemara is saying over here, then you end up that a rega would be something like 1/16 of a second. There are different gusaris. This Gemara is also in Avodah Zarah. It gives a bit of a different figure over there, 153,000 or something like that. Rabbeinu Tam actually has a sefer called Sefer HaYosher with different fidushim and psukim of his, and he actually says the correct gusa should actually be 113,000 from some. He says that you divide the hour into 24 parts, and you divide that into another 24, and that into another 24, and then that's a rega. And he says, because further on, we're going to talk about what could a person possibly say in a rega. And we're saying a person could say a short word such as kalim or yomus or something like that. So if it's only 1/13,000 and something of an hour, so it means about a quarter of a second, fine. A person could say a word like that in that fraction of time. But if it's 1/16 of a second, how is that possible? Anyway, so vizuhi rega, that is the definition of a rega. And we're saying Hashem is angry. What's the question?
Less than a second.
Well, either way, it's less than a second. According to Rabbi Natan, it's about a quarter of a second. According to the gears that we have in front of us in the Gemara, it's about a quarter of that, about 1/16 of a second. The zuhi rega, that is the definition of a rega. The enko bria yechol l'chaven oisa hashah. Now, there's no person or no creature that knows that exact moment. Chutz mi bilam ha-rasha. The only one who was able to do it was Bilam HaRasha, Yichtibe V'yedeya Das Elyon, where it says on him, he says on himself, in his last Nebuah, he says that he knows the mind of the Most High, of Hashem. So we have to ask, what does he mean by that phrase, V'yedeya Das Elyon? Hash Das Behemta L'Hava Yada. The man didn't even understand what his donkey is thinking, because as the Gemara is going to bring now the whole dialogue between him and the donkey, Das Elyon Hava Yada. How could he possibly know the Das Elyon? Which, I mean, on one level, what it means, as the Gemara is going to say, you have the whole dialogue between him and the donkey. If it was Yedea Das Behemto, he'd be able to anticipate each time what the donkey is going to answer, and he'd know to answer correctly. With that said, the Rif over here brings a different point as well, that Bechlal, the whole thing, where he's after all on his way to curse the Jewish people, and the donkey calls him out for the fact that you're such a mushchas that you go and have relations with me. What even makes you think that you're roy to be cursing the Jewish people, Bechlal? So the fact that he didn't even realize that point, it means that he wasn't Yedea Das Behemto. Leaving aside, and with the entire dialogue, each bit of dialogue between them, just the fact that he didn't realize that point, it marks him as that he didn't know Das Behemto.
What was it? Bilam HaRuha comes from Sitra Hara?
Yeah, but so first the Gemara is going to establish over here. So this next piece, again, is not in the Gemara here in Brachas, in printed Gemaras. It actually is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Avodah Zarah. Again, the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov put it in over here for completeness' sake. But after we deal with that, after we deal with the interplay between him and the donkey, then we're going to go back to explaining what's this business about Yedea Das Elyon. So my Das Behemto, the Amrile, so the people who were going with him, the Zikne Midyon or whoever, asked him, my time alarachavta susya, why aren't you riding on a horse? Now, I mean, important people in Tanakh often do ride on donkeys, but the question is, Etz Yosef says, you're in such a hurry, you want to get to Bolak as fast as possible, you would think you should be taking a horse, it goes faster. So he answers, I left my horse out in the meadow. So I have a horse, but I don't have it available right now. Right away, the donkey answers him and says, in the words of the pasuk, aren't I your donkey? In other words, I'm the regular animal that you use to ride on. Don't claim that you have a horse when in fact you don't. We mentioned this when we learned this in Sanhedrin and Avodah Zarah. I don't remember the marker of this part. That when he says that I left my horse in the meadow, he's also hinting to. He's saying we know by Makas Barad, we know that all the Mitzrayim who Yirei Hashem. Brought their animals inside, whereas all the ones Vashela, some Libre or Dvar Hashem left his animal out in the meadow. So Bilam is saying, I wasn't one of those Yirei Hashem. I had a horse at the time, but I left it out in the meadow and got killed by Makas Barod, and therefore I don't have one anymore. And it's a cute vote, considering it's 40 years later now, but still, anyway. So he says, okay, but Tina Ba'alma, okay, you know what? You're right. You are my regular animal, but I use you for carrying packages, not for riding on yourself. She says, no, Asher Rechavta Alai, you ride on me. She says, Kroi Ba'alma, okay, once in a while. No, she says, Me'od Chada Yemazer, the passage continues, from when you started out until now. V'loyod, and not only that, Shalisa Oiseimi, Maisi Issues Balayla, you treat me with issues by night. And we know that Siv Hocha Hahaskin Hiskanti, because she continues in the Pasuk, Hahaskin Hiskanti. The simple meaning of Hahaskin Hiskanti means, as Rashi says on the Pasuk, have I ever been used to acting like this? Have you ever seen me acting like this before? Crouching down, pressing you against the wall, etc., that you don't realize something unusual is going on. But what? She's saying Maisi issues, and you've been treating me like a husband and wife, you've been having relations with me. So Uchtiv Hasim Vati.
Same word?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the word issue. It's like ish for isha, yeah. So we find at the beginning of Sefer Melachim where David needed someone to warm him up, and they found him Avishag Ashunamis, and she became a Sechenes. So there they didn't actually have relations. The pasuk says Amelach Lo Yada, but still it establishes the point that the word Sechen means to have close physical contact. So the point is that, again, he had this whole argument with the donkey, and he didn't know what the donkey was after. So what does it mean, v'yadeh das elyon? And melamed, j'hoyadeh, l'chaben, oisashar, shakarish boch ho'koyispa. It means that he knew how exactly the moment, that one rega in which Hashem is in. This explains the Navi Micha, many years later, says to Jewish people, appropriately, it's after the Parshas Balak. He says, "Ami zechorna mayatz Balak Melech Moav. Remember what Balak Melech Moav planned. Umer ono is a Bilam ben Baor, and what Bilam ben Baor answered him, Mina Shittim ada Gilgal, that Hashem brought you from Shittim to Gilgal, from Shittim, even though you had the chet of Baal Paor over there in Shittim. Nevertheless, the Eibushter brought you across the Yarden with Nisim and brought you to Gilgal. Lema'an das tzidkes Hashem, in order that you should realize the righteousness, the tzedakah of Hashem. So what's that last phrase? My lema'an das tzidkes Hashem." Hashem is telling the Jewish people through the Navi, look how much favors, how much tzedakah growing the fnim mishiras hadin I did for you on all those days when Bilam Arasha was trying to curse you. I didn't get angry, even though there's normally that 1/58,000th or 1/13,000th or whatever of an hour, one fraction of a second every day when the Eibushter gets angry, but on those days I didn't. If I got angry on those days, there wouldn't have been left over from the enemies of the Jewish people, or the usual euphemism for us Jewish people ourselves, there wouldn't have been a remnant left. Which Tosfa says, what would Bilam be able to say during that fraction of a second anyway? So Tosfa gives two answers. Number one, he could have said a short word like kali, which means get rid of them. In fact, Tosfos and Avodah Zarah says the result is, since we know that the Eibushter turned it over by Yapach Hashem Elokecha as a klal of bracha, the word kalem was instead turned into the word melech. Thus, we have the bracha that he said was suras melech boy. Then Tosfos gives a second answer. If he would have begun the klal during that moment, then it would be effective even if he continued afterwards. So the Eibushter did a favor to us Jewish people by not getting angry b'chlal during those days. So therefore, Bilam says, I can't do anything. Behind it, the Karmelit Bilam the Balak. This is what Bilam says to Balak. Mo ekev like kabri kale. How can I curse when Hashem doesn't want to curse? Or mo ezoim lezoam Hashem. How can I be angry when Hashem's not angry? Malamet shekolos and ayom lezoam. So that means that Hashem did not get angry any of those days, and thereby he saved us. So now we'll continue tomorrow. That's Hashem talking about what's more about this anger of Hashem every day. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gula Zayin Tishrei Lo'asib Lavoi. The Lasid Lover will see in the poil, and will see openly the real Metzios of the Jewish people. We'll see the Etzim and the Neshama, which is united with Atzmusa and Mohosi Yisparech. We say Yisrael v'Kod Shabrichu Kol Achad. So we'll see this. We'll see this connection, the way that it comes down, and the way that it permeates and is revealed all the five levels of the Neshama, all meaning all the Koyches and Nefesh, a person's Tainug, Rotzen, Seichel, Midas. All the Levushim of Machshava, Dibra, Maisa, all of those we will see the oneness of the Eibushter and the Jewish people, and within the Gufa Gashmi and all the Ramachei Borim Shagidim, we'll see in them Bepoil, and we'll see in them in a revealed way this concept that Yisroel v'Kod Shabrichu Kol Achad. Continuing on Hilchos Ma'acholos Hastoris, we mentioned yesterday that blood of fish is mutter, but blood of animals is not. Now, what about, for example, human blood? So if a person bites into a piece of bread or an apple or something, and blood comes out from his teeth onto the food, then he has to cut it away and throw it away. On the other hand, if a person's gums are bleeding and there's blood between them, then on weekdays you would be allowed to suck it out and swallow it because it hasn't separated from the body. So it's only osim d'rabbanan, and when it's inside the mouth and they're not choshesh. On Shabbos, it's a different matter because there you have an issue of making a chabura, of making a wound by sucking out blood. So that's a different issue.